Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 814, August the 13th, 1987. You heard the testimony this past week. I hope you were listening. And the news accounts of Oliver North talking about the secret team. And I wonder how you're enjoying the Iran-Contra affair and the parade of witnesses of the secret team. We've seen Richard Secord and Robert McFarlane, Gaston Segur, Robert Owen, Adolfo Calero, John Singlaub, Ellen Garwood, William O'Boyle, Joseph Kurz, Elliot Abrams, Robert Dutton, Felix Rodriguez, Louis Tams. Thomas Castillo was not visible. He's a CIA agent in Costa Rica. His name is Jose Fernandez. He went into private session. And there was Albert Hakim, David Lewis, Breton Sciarroni, Vaughn Hall, and, of course, Oliver North. And in the weeks to come, this week, Admiral Poindexter, George Shultz, Caspar Weinberger, and Edwin Meese will be following Oliver North. We will not see in public Michael Ledeen or Chichi Quintero or Tom Posey or Jack Terrell or John Fiers, Ian Fiers, Robert Earl, Donald Gregg, Jeb Bush, the son of George Bush, and John Hall. Robert Brown, Robert K. Brown, Bo Hai Pak from Reverend Moon's organization CAUSA, Carl Spitz Channel won't be there, Richard Miller won't be there. They've both pleaded guilty already, and they're not going to interview Thomas Kleins or Linda Jewell, G-U-E-L-L, the secretary from Western Goals. And the vice president of the United States, George Bush, refuses to be questioned on these matters, but matters are closing in on George Bush. This past week, with the Oliver North testimony, you saw his very capable attorney, Brendan Sullivan, fighting and sparring there with Arthur Lyman at the table and doing a very good job of representing Oliver North all the way through this whole thing until he throws it on the laps of the people above him and around him who went along with it. And then when it came down, said we never agreed with it. And Oliver North made some very good points about these people conducting it like a baseball game, and they select their teams. And his words were very, very pertinent to the way they select their witnesses and their people. Brendan Sullivan was an attorney for the Army for the Judge Advocate's Office in 1969, 1970. And there was a trial out here in California. People in our area remembered very well. Back east, it didn't get the wire service it should have. It was called the Mutiny Trial. 27 defendants were on trial for sitting on the lawn and objecting to the way they were treated at the stockade. And a friend of theirs among the group was murdered by the guards at the stockade about 10 to 15 feet from where they all were. And they sat on the lawn up in San Francisco and asked for Terrence Hallinan, the attorney, and wanted their rights represented, and they were charged with it was really a mutiny trial because they sat on the ground and asked to be represented because of their conditions there. There's a book called Unlawful Concert, an account of the Presidio mutiny case by Fred Gardner. It came out in 1970, published by Viking Press. And one of the defendants of the 27 in the case, his name was Richard Lee Gentile. And his mother stayed at my house during the whole trial. And Brendan Sullivan represented him and one other person in the case. And he was a very good attorney for these people. The first sentences were 14, 15, 16 years in the stockade. When it was over, and because of the political activism of persons on the Monterey Peninsula, and I was very active going every day to the trial, the sentences were reduced. Out of the 27 mutineers, as they were referred to in the Army, there was a group that had tried to commit suicide. The conditions were so terrible. So in a six-month period, there were numerous attempts of suicide, of hanging, cutting arms, drinking lye, cutting wrists, cutting throats, drinking shampoo, metal polish. I'll do more on that trial because it was a very interesting trial. But I want to get on to the Iran-Contra affairs now. Just to say that Brendan Sullivan was out here, instead of having the trial in San Francisco, they moved it to Fort Ord because they could isolate the hearings, whatever trial. It was a small room, and just people from Carmel that they thought wouldn't be interested, but we did turn into a team. And as activists, they had us photographed every day when we went in. Helicopters were over the buildings. And they took our licenses, and I took a picture of the man taking my picture, and we went into those computer files of Western Goals that are now in the hands of Carl Spitz Channel and John Singlau. Those were the pictures of law-abiding citizens that Reagan had turned the army on to get these protesters. We weren't hurting anybody, and the conditions certainly warranted the attention that it got. But those files went directly into the computer from Los Angeles Police Department, as I say, into Western Goals. Last week, I just gave a few reasons why I believe the president is mentally sick and off his rocker as a leader and as a person, that he's really gone. And this week, you might have seen all the quotations when Oliver North was testifying and earlier with the other witnesses. He says he's too busy to watch the show, and he gets himself visibly photographed in the morning, 9 to 10, going out of the White House, and then he probably goes in the back door. He's home by 10, and he's got the rest of the day. But he doesn't recall arms for hostage finding. He doesn't remember what happened. He has no recollection of these events. But the worst part is that he's not interested. That's worst of all. Now, Oliver North was asked questions about his various activities. And at one time, he said to Arthur Lyman, "My memory has been shredded." Now, I've done a lot of broadcasts on the control of Candy Jones. And last week I did a one-hour broadcast in New York at a radio station where Candy Jones is still a broadcaster. And I mentioned to the producer who was going to put on the show that I thought Oliver North had his memory erased like Candy, because when he was asked questions, when Arthur Lyman presented the questions, he would get into the fourth or fifth word, and then the attorney would whisper to him. Then he'd look down to a page, and I believe it was Senator Inouye who said, "Are you reading your answers?" And also Arthur Lyman said, "What's in the book?" And he could have the answers or key speeches to specific questions that they might have even known Arthur Lyman was going to ask, the kind of material he was going to ask, because he would look down at a book. First he was whispered to, and if he was asked about country number two, he would ask his attorney, "Which one is that?" And he didn't know the code name for the president of the United States that he was using, Joshua. And at other times he'd say, "You tell me," or, "That's okay, I'll take your word for it." And all he knew were these patriotic speeches, but similar to the control of Candy Jones, where she was telephonically changed to Arlene Grant and forgot who she was as Candy Jones, the memory can be erased, and he would give these pat speeches with no response, and nothing's wrong, and he didn't do anything, and the Contras needed the money. But the way he responded and whispered all of the time, he was coached. It was clear he was coached. The questions weren't finished when the whispering began. And I believe that he was only allowed to remember certain things and that he never will remember those other matters that are very important to this story or have any feeling about them, except that the Contras were starving and needed attention and that he was going to save lives. Saving lives is the biggest lie of the century, and a total contradiction of everything he and the secret team did, but he sincerely believes that to save lives, you tell lies, and he could say that over and over. He also is indoctrinated with a lot of Christian belief that what he's doing is right because God wants it, and there was an article in the Knight Ritter Service San Jose Mercury this past week, syndicated in other newspapers too. This was Sunday, July the 11th, "God and Country, a Retreat for Christian Soldiers." There's a place in Pennsylvania, White Sulphur Springs, a summer camp, a military resort, where people come to discuss Christianity and battle. And this article says perhaps the most famous member of the group is Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, the Marine embroiled in the Iran-Contra scandals, who went to the center 2 years ago. This is at the height of all the operations going on in Iran and the Contra activities. And they pray and study and read the Bible and reconcile it with Christian ethics. So he has absolutely no problems fighting communism, and he goes to this Christian retreat. And besides the military indoctrination, you get a good hunk of the religious, and therefore you can't be doing anything wrong. Now, the secret team, the persons involved with the secret team, were identified particularly, there were several, Albert Hakim and Richard Secord, because the funds that Oliver North and William Casey set up were for Hakim and Secord and their Swiss bank accounts, and they are the persons that are linked to the original Transcomputer International, the corporation set up by Otto von that I've talked about for so many years. And it's no coincidence that the heart of the secret team goes back to Otto von Bolschwing's network up in Los Gatos, California, set up by Albert Hakim when he came home from Iran and had money from William Simon of the Olin Foundation and could pick up the Otto von Bolschwing network in San Francisco. Now, the news accounts tell how Casey relished the secret fund. There's one story here from the San Francisco Chronicle, and I'm sure many of you saw articles in your newspapers to what the secret team is. I'll just quote a few from this newspaper. William Casey embraced the fund set up by the arms sales to Iran. He would use it for secret operations. North denied using the fund meant a CIA outside of a CIA. Well, he could deny that, but it could be a DIA outside of the NSC. William Cohn said this is one of the most serious revelations of our hearings. Senator Daniel Inouye said, the creation and maintenance of a secret government within our government is what this plan is all about. David Bourne of Oklahoma, chairman of the Senate Intelligence, said about the concept of private slush fund, this is very shocking. We really would have a complete loss of constitutional government in this country if you could sell taxpayers' property, set up a fund from the profits so that the president and Congress have no control over it. That, to me, is very alarming. The money was set up in a way that there didn't have to be a presidential finding. Take government property, airplanes, tanks, missiles, hawks, sell it, use the money for your team, use it for other operations, and the president doesn't have to know it. And then, of course, the information came out that retired Major General Singlar, Laub, and Albert Hakim, who managed the Swiss bank accounts with Willard Zucker in Switzerland, that they didn't even have security clearances, or Oliver North didn't even check it. I believe Secord had some kind of a clearance. Hakim never did, and he said he didn't even check it, that they could have secret government devices, they could have weapons out of the Pentagon, and they didn't even need to have clearance. Now, North bragged that the reason for this team is that we could obtain a ship overnight. And William Casey thought that was great. And he said, Casey tells him, we can't find one anywhere else. Get me a ship. Well, what do you need a ship overnight for? He didn't say what the ship did. It may send some arms to Iran, but they could have been there not overnight, but on another method of carrying them there, or airplanes carry them there. These huge airplanes carry them. You don't need a ship, I don't think. Or to bring home one hostage, you don't need a ship. They took the ship over to the Middle East to bring home one hostage. So he's bragging about how fast you can get a ship. Secord can do anything, and North can do anything, but yet they haven't made it clear why the ship was important at all. And Arthur Lyman said these hearings are a celebration of the fact that we have a constitutional form of government. If you accept North's testimony, a secret government within the government is acceptable so long as a superior says so. In this case, I suggested it would be Admiral Poindexter, and even that he assumed the president. But if they say it, then you can do it. And Lyman said you have to understand that the CIA was funded by the United States government. You understood that the government puts limits on what the CIA can do. And I ask you today, with all that you've gone through, he asked Oliver North, aren't you shocked that the director of the CIA is proposing the creation of another organization outside of the one he's the director of to do these kinds of things outside of his own organization? And North said, I could tell you I'm not shocked. I don't see how it's necessarily inconsistent. I don't see how it's necessarily unconstitutional or any way a violation of anything I know. And that's an example of a man not being in his right mind. And there are hospital records of him being at hospitals for mental conditions, and he's had a history of mental illnesses. But I imagine after Vietnam, he was really there just a short time to get all those medals. There was a very good long time to program him like a Candy Jones so that he doesn't see anything wrong with not needing a president's directive, that the CIA doesn't know, that the agency goes past the Secretary of State and get weapons without the signature of the Secretary of Defense. He's absolutely neutered in the way of response and doesn't know what you're talking about. And the point is that this organization is outside the Constitution, the U.S. laws, and the CIA director should have known it. They went ahead and mined the harbors in Nicaragua without Congress knowing it. And before that, Henry Kissinger was bombing Cambodia during the Nixon administration. They had a book on how to kill Sandinistas. The polite word was neutralize. And the book that Oliver North wrote with the intelligence community said do it as a Christian act. The word Christian is in the book on how to kill people, be a Christian and kill. And Representative Sarbanes said that the goal was really a junta, but the junta has been in place for a long, long time. And he said if people will stop even for a moment and think about that, they ought to be deeply concerned about setting up an operation free of any checks or balances. But these men are slow learners, and this is what we've had for a long, long time since World War II. And they've looked the other way. Howell Heflin from Alabama said there have to be checks and balances. And North said he presented it as the ultimate covert operation. An ultimate operation doesn't have the constraint of democracy. Now, that's the same Oliver North that wanted to put in a martial law plan, stop democracy. This is the same Oliver North who wants to have a democratic group, the Contras, running Nicaragua. And he has been on record working with FEMA, Edwin Meese and Mr. Gutierrez, the persons who set up the original martial law plan, that there's a necessity. It would come about eventually, of course, taking away all rights of persons in the United States. And North said, and I'll repeat it again, he presented it as the ultimate covert operation. An ultimate covert operation does not have the constraints of democracy. And he's just saying, take democracy and shove it up yours. And then Mr. Secord, who resigned from the Air Force in 1983 because of a Pentagon investigation of him with Edwin Wilson, is checking out weapons from our Defense Department, allegedly left it, and he really hasn't, and can get weapons and then accrue 6, 14, 40 million, whatever he wants, in his own bank account after having, for all purposes, left the Defense Department and then becomes a private businessman. And, of course, he and Albert Hakim are holding dear to their millions of dollars of profits. So it's a pretty bad story. The San Jose Mercury has an article, North links the government with a secret government. And it's similar to that, using the profits from weapon shipments to have an organization outside of the CIA. The plan advanced by Casey would have minimized the CIA involvement in covert operations by having them run part of a private network headed by Major General Secord and his partner Albert Hakim of Los Gatos. Well, when Ronald Reagan came in, the first thing he did was to escalate the budget for the CIA and the intelligence community, so there wasn't any need for this. They literally had all the money they wanted. What they didn't want were the checks and balances, because members of Congress may say, that's not a bad, good thing to do, that's a bad thing to do, this will insult our allies, we're telling them one thing and we're making a policy another way. They may think we're hypocritical if it's found out. No, they wanted their own government that accounted to no elected person, not even the president, without security clearances and unlimited millions of dollars, referred to as the secret team. North was questioned by Arthur Lyman about the testimony of Albert Hakim. He said that Ronald Reagan was pressuring to win the release of American hostages in Lebanon by the November 86 election for political purposes. And North said, no, that wasn't true, but he was interested in release of them for the State of the Union message. And I wondered if he was throwing that out because of the challenger and a hint of a blackmail. If you go too far against me, I'll talk about Christa McAuliffe and the State of the Union message. And so the subject, of course, was dropped right away. Now, there's been a breakthrough in the linkage of George Bush to the drug traffic. There are quite a few connections of Bush to the drug traffic. And I think there's going to be more as it comes down. There's some important articles that are coming out about George Bush. In 1982, when he was here in Monterey, the Monterey Peninsula, for the Republican convention, I've cited this many times, I was handing out these handbills or sheets of paper that were put on the windshield of different cars and different booths at the convention. And among other things, I mentioned CIA Director George Bush headed and once had to control the Australian CIA Nugan Bank. The bank collapsed when Frank Nugan was murdered. 14 other deaths followed immediately. This London Times described the affair as the bank CIA Heroin and Murder. And this came out in the London Times, August the 31st, 1980. And it went on to say that $55 million to $1 billion of CIA dollars from narcotics still were missing. And again, this goes into the till of the secret team. And I said, while George Bush was heading the CIA, they were heavily involved in the Southeast Asian narcotic traffic and drug wars. Now, this past week, actually it's 2 weeks ago now, there's a gentleman in Los Angeles who is, his name is Anthony J. Hilder, and he's on radio station KCZN. It's 1400 watts AM in Ventura. I've done a lot of broadcasts with Anthony Hilder, and he had live on his radio show Lieutenant Colonel Bo Gritz, G-R-I-T-Z, and Larry Trimmer. And they were talking about the Burmese general, Khun Sa, and the Burmese general has made videotapes of the American CIA involved in drug traffic, and he talks about the Burmese leader who has 40,000 men in private army. He oversaw the opium and heroin traffic of the Golden Triangle, and it, his testimony, his, not his testimony, but his video and the stuff that Gritz put on the air, goes into Richard Armitage, the current Assistant Secretary of Defense, who was arranging for the purchase of massive amounts of opium and heroin that were sent to this country. And also he talks on this broadcast with Anthony Hiller, and it was on the Ray Bream Show in L.A., about George Bush being involved with his narcotics traffic and an Australian bank in where the money was going, that it was a CIA bank, and Bush was CIA director at the time. Well, this is 1987 that this is coming out, and this next week I'm going to do a radio program this coming Wednesday with Anthony Hilder on his program and with Bo Gritz talking about Richard Armitage, the Assistant Secretary of Defense, the CIA, the Nguyen Bank, and George Bush in narcotics traffic and putting the deposits in the Nguyen Bank from Southeast Asia drugs. The San Jose Mercury had a story June 5, 1987, about Bo Gritz. Burmese rebel links the Pentagon official to drug deals. And he also links, well, Theodore Shackley's involved, part of the Christic Institute, one member of the secret team, and Mr. Armitage from the Defense Department, who went to Lebanon with money for the Defense Drug Agency, the DEA. And Armitage was working with Ross Perot, whose name comes out in the articles currently, and Adolfo Calero, who's been charged with drug dealing in Costa Rica, and he works with the CIA. He's a defendant in the Christic Institute suit. Armitage was traveling to the Middle East with money for the DEA from Calero and with Oliver North, and North had links, has links to the Middle East, to the drug traffickers. I want to do that program soon, the one from Newsday. But the current one in San Jose Mercury says a drug warlord in Burma has accused U.S. Secretary of Defense Richard Armitage and others of drug trafficking to fund their anti-communist operations. In a three-hour video interview smuggled out of the Southeast Asia with Khun Sa, he said high-ranking American officials were involved in the traffic from 1965 until at least 1979, and that included George Bush and his Australian bank. One of those officials involved, pardon me, in the trafficking is former CIA official Theodore Shackley, and he's the particular person involved with the Iran-Contra controversy. Shackley and Armitage were not available, of course, to be interviewed. Armitage controlled the finances of the drug operation. After Vietnam, Armitage, a prominent drug trafficker in Bangkok, currently our deputy under Casper Weinberger, was identified by Khun Sa. Between 75 and 79, 1975 to 79, he was a prominent trafficker. He was part of the American embassy where Armitage established the Far East Trading Company after leaving the American embassy, and that was a cover for narcotics traffic. In his biography in Who's Who in America, the Pentagon official is listed as a partner of the export company, AGT Export Company, in Bangkok. That was the Far Eastern Trading Company. He was there in 1976 to 78. Gritz said Wednesday night he was asked by the White House to contact Khun Sa last October 86, a year ago, investigate reports that his forces financed their operations through drug trade with the control and knowledge of certain the missing Americans that he went over to look for, did the drug king know about the missing Americans? He was supposed to locate four MIA. Now, James Bogritz was the person, the prototype of Rambo that was set up to please Ronald Reagan and Alexander Haig and the teams in the White House. This great Rambo was Bogritz. Now Bogritz is saying, and turning against his lord and master, and saying, "Your vice president and your deputy director of the Defense Department, I learned when I went to look for the missing in action, those Vietnam veterans. He is telling me now, because he wants to get out of the drug traffic, and he can't get out because the White House or the American government officials don't want him to stop the drug traffic." The Defense Department spokesman, Major Randy Morger, said that Caspar Weinberger had complete trust in Mr. Armitage, and the staff of CUMSA said Theodore Shackley was the central figure for the American-controlled operations. Shackley is believed to have been brought up with Iran and the possibility of ransoming American hostages. They were involved, Shackley and Kleins, in Chile when Salvador Allende was murdered in the coup there. They were active in with Oliver North and John Singlaub in the Iran and Daesh Iran Contra affair, and they worked earlier with Itzko, with Edwin Wilson, and Eric von Marburg, and General Secord with the Egyptian sales that went also to the pocket of their own pockets and accounts, and they're very good at making profit off of government contracts and weapons. Well, this is an article about the CIA, Theodore Shackley, and CUMSA is mentioning the fact that Vice President George Bush was on the head of a bank in Australia where the money for these drug traffics were being defended. Another article, June 5th, 1987, underworld figure accuses U.S. official of drug dealing. Now, there have been quite a few articles about Bogritz because he's well known, and Jack Anderson had a story January the 30th, the first of the year, that Texas billionaire H. Ross Perot discussed with Vice President George Bush whether a top Pentagon official should be fired because of his close relationship to Vietnamese woman living in Washington, and the high-up figure was Richard Armitage. Now, when Ross Perot brought this up to George Bush, he wasn't thinking, evidently, or didn't know, let's say, that Bush was depositing the money that Armitage had. There were links of Armitage to the Vietnamese narcotics traffic of Southeast Asia, and Ross Perot, who worked closely with Bogritz and Clint Eastwood and the Litton Industries, going for the missing in action, Ross Perot was concerned about the White House because the president's wife was active against drugs. He said President Mrs. Reagan should have an investigation to see the possibility not only that Americans are alive in Southeast Asia, but they were concerned about Mr. Armitage. And the Justice Department said, "We're perfectly happy, but off." There's a story in the San Jose Mercury, January the 12th, a long article. Perot reportedly urged a drug probe of the U.S. official, how, besides the Jack Anderson article, how he asked them in the Defense Department and so forth to help find out the drug connections of Mr. Armitage. But again, he had the information on the Bangkok and embassy and the drug dealing, and Theodore Shackley, part of the secret team, and yet the Defense Department said, "We're not interested," and the lawsuit was filed. He referred to that in the January article. This was the Christic Institute that was filed May 29th, 1986, and the article said a lawsuit exposed details of the Contra supply pipeline and has taken on new significance since news first broke of the diversion profits of arms sales in the Contras. As defendants in the lawsuit, referring to the Christic Institute, was filed in May 1986, there are several prominent figures in the Iran-Contra affair, such as Major General Richard Secord and the hawkish business partner Albert Hakim of Los Gatos, and Theodore Shackley as deputy director of the CIA, and then he was station chief in Saigon. And this article tells about the seriousness of these people named in a lawsuit in 1969 by the Christic Institute, and they said, "We better go into this because the persons mentioned there, Thomas Kleins, a close associate of Evan Wilson, are linked to drugs, and they thought Shackley and Kleins and Wilson and Secord and Armitage could weaken the American position if they were involved pushing their anti-communist efforts while they're in narcotics traffic. And this came out right after the Iranian story broke wide open. Mr. Hassan-Foss had already landed, and this was a very reasonable thing to go into General Vang Pao's monopoly of opium traffic because it linked to persons working for the White House out of the National Security Council that were involved in Southeast Agency. And as I say, Mr. Armitage is still deputy director of the Defense Department. So I'll take a one-minute break and go back to the drug connections that are in the news now because they're very, very important.